Hi everyone, welcome to this episode of More Than Maps, where we'll be talking about a feminist approach to walkability and centering care in urban design. So my name is Grace, and I'm a senior geography with GIS major at Gustavus Novus College, and I have two special guests with me tonight, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Christy. I'm also a senior geography major. And yeah, welcome to the pod.
Yeah, and I'm Tori. I'm also a senior geography major, Wild World. Yeah, welcome to our podcast.
All right, so let's get right into it. So what is a feminist approach to walkability and why does it even matter? Well, let's see. Feminism in urban planning matters a lot because if you search on Google for like urban planners, you will mostly see like dead white old men. And that is very reflective of the current industry and the demographics that make up who the urban planners are in the U.S. So, yeah, for my project and what I'm talking about today, I just kind of wanted to talk about how, with urban planning being dominated by males, that also, like, means that there's a lack of diversity and range in the kind of ideas and projects that they put out, you know? So you get a lot of the same thing happening, and you get a lot of those things not working because you're not talking to the people who live in the communities, who work in the communities, who commute to all these communities. You're just getting someone who's coming in and figuring out the best place to put a highway and not really thinking about the community. So that's why we are talking about centering care in urban design. And I think a really good way to do that is through walkability. So we're gonna talk a little bit about feminism some more, and kind of masculinity also. So, Christy and Tori, what are some things that you think about when you hear the word masculinity?
Ooh, okay. Well, I think the first word that comes to mind, which is kind of a cop-out answer because it's just saying the word a second time, but you know, like toxic masculinity, I think is been a buzzword, which is great, things we need to talk about, but you know, thinking about things that are, you know, masculinity isn't inherently bad, but thinking about toxic masculinity in the sense that, like, no feelings, individualistic, self-reliant, things like that, I think that's kind of what, I think cold, I don't know how else to describe it other than cold on the fly.
Yeah, totally.
Sure, yeah, and when I think of masculinity, I guess I think of power and who holds power, especially within these urban spaces, who was the city built for and who wasn't it built for. And obviously, you know, most males' lived experience and interaction with the city and the culture of the city is going to be very different than someone who identifies as female or other identities as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All of that was definitely correct, and I didn't really have, like, a rubric or a, this is wrong, this is right, you know, so that was great, and I totally agree, and those kind of notions that both of you were talking about really have manifested physically in our built environment, because our built environment has been made mostly by men, you know, and not even just men, but white men. Like I saw on, when you Google urban planner, you know, there's a type, and we gotta break out of that because things need to change in urban centers. Like, this year and semester, I've been looking at downtown St. Peter, Minnesota, which it's a small town with about, like, I don't know, we have 11,000 people here.
Yeah.
So we only have a small downtown area with a few small businesses, and yet there's a highway that goes directly through downtown. And so that's just really interesting because that makes it kind of dangerous to walk downtown, and it makes it really loud. So I'm interested to hear, Christine, Tori, what you would describe downtown St. Peter to be like.
Dangerous. Actually, this past weekend, my mom and I almost got hit by a car because of the lack of visibility with some of the parking situations that are situated downtown. I don't really know how to explain it for a way that the viewers can make it make sense, but there's a lot of crossovers and not really distinctive patterns with walkability and drivability as well. It's all just kind of pummeled into one, and yeah, some near-death experiences. Yeah.
So you'd say it was like in that area, pedestrians weren't prioritized.
Oh, definitely. Yes. And yeah, I would definitely say it with the planning of it. I wouldn't even really say it was the driver's fault or anything like that. It was just kind of how it's planned out.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I think dangerous. Yeah, absolutely. You know, going back to who is it built for? Who is it made for? Clearly not for people to walk. I mean, there are businesses there, and there are sidewalks around those businesses. But you know, one of our favorite local coffee shops, River Rock, little plug.
Absolutely.
One of my favorite things to do is grab coffee with a friend and then go for a walk. But anytime we do that, our number one priority is getting the coffee and then getting off Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
We want to get back. We want to get away from downtown because it really is, it's so loud. You really don't feel comfortable crossing the street. I mean, there are crosswalks, but cars are just moving so fast. It is a highway and you've got big semis going. You can't even sit outside, especially in a time of COVID, they've got chairs outside. You can't sit outside and enjoy your coffee because you can't hear the person sitting across the table from you.
Yeah, exactly. That's great. Yeah, okay, so I just wanna, not to keep you both talking for the whole thing, but I'm really enjoying hearing your perspectives and thoughts on this. So I guess one more question for opinions on both of you. Not guaranteed that it'll be the last one, but if you were to make any changes or improvements to St. Peter, and I know you both know my ideas, but if you have any others or, something different you're thinking about, what changes would you make to downtown St. Peter?
Ooh. I have, two that come to mind. One is on that Main Street, just some of those crossing areas are very dependent on the pedestrian to make the decision to cross, and it's different on both sides obviously because it is a two-way sort of deal, but making that more, I'm not sure how, but making it just more safe in general so you don't have to play this tango with death, whatever you want to call it. And then if you kind of branch out a little bit more into the residential neighborhood spaces in St. Peter. There's not a lot of lighting, street lights in general, and that, says a lot about who the city is meant for, because if it's for women who tend to maybe be in some more dangerous situations at nighttime, those street signs are very pertinent to keeping safety in those spaces. Yeah, that's what I would say for that.
Yeah, I mean, I will get into what, your research later, but I agree with a lot of the conclusions you came to, in the sense that thinking about campus up here, campus, there are sections of campus that are built for just people walking. You can't drive to some buildings, and I just can't even imagine how nice it would be to be able to walk downtown and not feel like I have to deal with cars or worry about being able to see around a car that's parked on the side of the road. That's just a whole nother thing. So I don't know. I don't know that I have any solutions particularly, which maybe isn't fair. I just have critiques, but
that's okay. And I think the point of that is more so just to kind of get people thinking about their own hometowns and what changes that they'd like to see in their own spaces and own areas. So, like, we could think about campus. You know, what do we like about campus? Well, one of the things that I like about the campus here at Gustavus is that, you know, during a non-pandemic time, you can walk around and you can see people that you know everywhere. Like, you just made me think of this, Tori, with, like, visibility of your surroundings. You know, that being able to see people and, like, wave at them, say hi, that is a really good aspect of building community. But then when you're commuting to work or even just driving down the hill from, like, Gustavus's campus into St. Peter, you're not really interacting with anyone besides the people that are in your car, if you even have anyone with you in your car. So that's kind of one of the things that centering community care is looking at improving when it is used in urban design and urban planning. And that's kind of where walkability comes in, you know, creating the opportunity for people to feel safe walking around, and all, like, they're not going to get hit by a car, or, you know, maybe if there's, like, if the sidewalk and the bike lane are the same thing, you got to watch out for bikes, you know, because you have to move for the bike can't move for you, and all that, like, hierarchy stuff. But so the point of walkability is that you have this space where you feel safe and comfortable being for extended periods of time, you know, extended amounts of time. There we go. And because, like, that's your space, that's where people can be. You can walk downtown, you can see people, you can run into people, say hi to them, get to know each other. Like, you know, if you walk into your, I mean, Tori, Kristen, and we go to our local coffee shop, River Rock, probably like 5 times a week or something. And we, you know, we walk in there and we say hi to the baristas, and they know our names, we know theirs, we ask how they're doing, and, you know, it's, we've built a little community and a relationship with them in that frequency of contact, and not even just physical contact, but, like, seeing them, you know, like, being in the same space as them, and having the ability to talk to them. So that's something that is a really big goal of walkability too. Kind of moving into, well, you know, I asked Tori and Christy what changes they would make to downtown St. Peter. So I'm going to share kind of my thinking behind what changes I would make to downtown St. Peter. They hit a lot of great things, and I'm just only gonna add some supplemental stuff to that, and you hopefully will have, like, an idea of kind of what walkability would look like in your city or town or wherever you're from, and kind of start thinking about ways or, like, things you could change about your current environment to make it more accessible and walkable. So I'm gonna do a little exercise first, not physical exercise, as we debunked earlier. There's a town, you know, and you've got a road going straight through it. There's sidewalks on either side. And there's only a few people around. You know, like, that looks pretty normal. You can probably envision that really well. There's businesses on other sides, like apartments above those businesses. Some cool, like, historical things in the background, and you've got some street lamps and cars parked, like, classic American city, you know, like, much of the Western world, like, urban areas look like that. But so then, take the road meant for cars and turn it into a area meant only for pedestrians. Now you have so much more you can do with that space than just have it be a path for cars to go on. You know, like, people can walk there, they can bike there. Those restaurants and businesses, they can move, like, clothing racks from their stores out into the street, and that would attract more people buying their product, you know? Restaurants can have tables and, or like booth seating outside or bar table top seating, you know, more options, drawing more people in. And though you can have benches, community tables where if you want to have like a picnic with your kids or with like you're babysitting some kids or something, you know, you can bring them out and you will just have lots of opportunities to meet people and see people. You know, you get exposure to others and you build community in that way. So I guess coming back to this little exercise, Christy and Tori, if you had to choose between the town with a road straight through it and the town with a pedestrian zone in the middle of it, which town would you prefer to live in and why?
I'd say this is the easiest question so far. Definitely the one that you can walk through. I think I was telling Grace, I really like that phrase, frequency of contact. Mm-hmm. Is that what it is? Mm-hmm. You know, one of my, I'm just thinking to, Grace and I are moving to Minneapolis together, and when we were driving around looking at apartments, I just remember one thing. We were like, oh, are there people out walking? Like, oh, do they look like they're our age? Like, what's going on? You know, thinking about how that was so important to us then. And so I'm just thinking about that in this context. And man, we really want to be in a neighborhood where people feel like they can walk around and spend time with each other and feel comfortable around each other. And, you know, a place that prioritizes people walking versus an avenue for cars really, I think, gets at the essence of that. So
absolutely.
Option B is my answer.
You know, I would agree. I would maybe contest a little bit just in terms of Minnesota and snow.
Yeah.
And being able, and what walkability looks like in different weather and climate regions. But yes,
yeah.
I do agree with having a less auto-centric, whatever system, traveling system. It just needs to look a little different in different areas. It's not a one-size-fits-all kind of deal, I think.
Yeah, no, and that's such a great point. Like, with Minnesota, which I am not from here, you know, that's a great point, Christy. Like, if we were in charge of St. Peter and we had, like, magic wands where we could just, like, say, boop, okay, now 169 doesn't exist there, and that's, like, pedestrians only, that wouldn't really make sense for a majority of the year since it would be covered in snow. And yeah, Minnesotans are tough and they don't really care, but they don't really like to sit outside in the snow for leisurely activities besides like ice fishing or something, I think, you know? My thinking with St. Peter, because as Christy was saying, you know, you have to tailor things to each place. It's not a one-size-fits-all. There will be visuals of this available for all you listeners at home. But my idea was to use the side streets in between our favorite coffee shop and across the block. You know, there's 169, and then there's a street that intersects with that. And take the intersecting street on either side of 169 in that area and turn those into pedestrian-only zones, because those are really just like crossing streets, you know, and they have some parking on them, but I think, especially because of their location, they could really be turned into really like poppin' areas, you know, with lots of people there, involvement. Because right across from River Rock, there's a pizza place, you know, and then across the street, there's a sandwich shop and an insurance shop. So I don't know if they'd want to set out some tables or something. But there's lots of like businesses down that street. And so having a place to sit and rest while you're having your like day of shopping or whatever that's nice. When I was down looking at St. Peter, kind of getting a feel for the landscape, I was sitting in one of the four benches that are available in downtown St. Peter, and I had my measuring tape with me, my freshly acquired measuring tape, and I was sitting there, and I measured it out and found out that it's 9 feet from the bench to 169. So I was asking one of my professors who has children and lives in St. Peter if he would sit with his two-year-old on that bench to take a rest while shopping. And he said, absolutely not. That's way too dangerous. I can't do that. And I just think, like, yeah, that makes sense. Why were these benches put here in the first place? It's just not safe. And if you're really thinking about community and safety, then you're thinking about people of all ages and all abilities, and you wouldn't put benches 9 feet away from a highway. I know that's one small thing, but it's those small things that make a difference. So now, moving into our last segment of this episode, we're going to talk about how to read a landscape and what that is kind of all about. So I'm going to ask Christy and Tori to just talk for about a minute or so about your hometowns and just kind of describe it for us so that we can get a feel for what it's like there.
I can start. My hometown is in Edina, Minnesota, and it has a population of about 51,000 people. I would say something very unique about Edina, for good or for worse, is the lack of sidewalks that there are. However, the infrastructure and the tax revenue that goes towards maintenance and stuff is very relatively high. The systems for snow plowing, for example, and construction and that kind of stuff is very efficient because that's something that Edina takes priority for. So even though there aren't a lot of sidewalks in Edina per se, I would say that most residents would say that it is a very walkable place to be because of the wideness of the streets, the fact that everyone has their own driveway, and people don't really rely on an alleyway system per se, makes it so it's walkable and also fairly accessible in terms of how many grocery stores and other types of stores that you would need. I would say, you know, I live within probably 10-15 minutes of probably at least like 30 grocery stores or places where you can get essentials.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, my hometown's quite a bit different from Christie's. I grew up in a town of about 3,000 people on the south central coast of Alaska, in Valdez, Alaska. And I think something, you know, you touched on sidewalks, Christie, got me thinking a little bit. You know, something that's interesting about Valdez is it's very small. So in that sense, it's walkable. Just because there's not very many places to go. All the roads are like 20 miles an hour, maybe 30. But once again, you can do the loop in 5 minutes in a car. So I think that makes it a little unique. But speaking of sidewalks, you know, we live in a constant state of construction. I was going to say destruction. That's not what I meant. Construction. And, you know, they're always working on roads. But, you know, if I think back to my childhood when they're doing these construction projects, very rarely were they redoing sidewalks at the same time or redoing sidewalks at all. And so, you know, that's a conscious decision to put money towards in, you know, an automobile society. But one thing that I'm thinking to campus again, where we've got these areas where only people can walk. Valdez has a couple park strips, which are like interconnected biking systems that no cars can be in. It's not, you know, they're bike paths. It looks a lot like campus in the sense that you just got all these paved walking trails going back and forth, and normally there's a park in the middle, and that tends to be in the middle of a ton of communities. And so that kind of gets to that frequency of contact. You meet your neighborhood kids there, and you know, you do those sorts of things. So in that sense, there are spaces set up for individuals to, you know, where pedestrians are prioritized. Valdez is by no means perfect, but I guess that's maybe just an example of something that could exist and does exist.
Yeah, and that's a great one, too. So what Christy and Tori were doing there was they were picturing their hometowns in their minds and then picking out some things that were standing out to them. And obviously we're talking about like urban planning and mobility and walkability. So those things were standing out more in this conversation. But when you are doing just a general like reading of the landscape, think about those things, like pay attention to what stands out to you most, you know? For me, when I think of my hometown, I think of like wall art and all these murals that are all over the place. And then like, I think of rain because, you know, I'm from Olympia, Washington, and it never stops raining there practically. But yeah, and then I think of the like spatiality of how downtown is set up, where it's like a grid and you have like really clear blocks, so there's roads and sidewalks and parking everywhere, and it's really like clustered and cramped, but you see people there all the time, like, and I think that's because of the businesses and how because of the community that we're able to build and create there in that space. So yeah, so basically reading the landscape is just going into wherever like your environment is and just kind of taking a look around and really critically analyzing it. So Tori was saying, you know, the sidewalk, or well, I might mess it up, but like the sidewalks, you don't really, they don't put much money into them because it's construction all the time, so why would you keep putting money into something that you keep having to fix when cars are way more important and way more used for getting around? Like, that makes sense. Think critically about these things, you know? For Christy, it was very similar of like, you know, we don't really have sidewalks, but we really care about our road infrastructure. And so just kind of thinking about like, well, why is that? Why is road infrastructure placed at a higher value than sidewalks and even sidewalk quality? And this is just thinking in walkability senses, but you can do it for anything. Like, how close is the nearest grocery store to your house or your friend's house or even your neighborhood? You know, if you live in a suburb, where's the closest grocery store? Kind of things like that. Where can you get your essentials that you need to survive? So yeah, I just encourage you to go out into your communities and think critically about how things are placed and where they are, and kind of ask about like, why are they there? You know, just kind of think deeper and maybe even do a little bit of personal research and investigating on that to kind of ask, you know, like, the why of where, getting that going with our theme of our podcast, you know.
Chris, more than if maps. I could add something.
Yeah, Christy, please.
Just in terms of reading landscape, you know, there's actually a great amount of storytelling that you can do when you learn how to read a landscape. Mm-hmm. For example, most of what you may encounter with in your daily walk is a reflection or a resolution of some sort of conflict or so you see a stop sign. Why was that put there? Who needed that? What was that conflict there? If you have very frequent street lights, who is that serving? Who decided to put that there? Who is that serving? Or who is that not serving? So I think you can really take a look and see, like you were saying, like critical analysis, but also there's a justice component there, right? There's a huge conflict and peace resolution, and that's huge. And you can even go deeper into the geography world and look at naming of streets and who is that serving and what kind of culture is that all.
Who does it represent?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And I think, I mean, critical analysis might sound like a scary word, but you know, research is really just questioning the world around you. Christy brought up storytelling. That's basically what we're doing. We're just trying to describe the complex world around us. My favorite tweet of all time is, research is just effing around and finding out. And you can do that in your day-to-day life. And mm-hmm. I think that that's super awesome. So, yeah, definitely do it.
Thinking on applying that, and thank you for bringing that up, Christy. That was excellent. But I think applying the effing around and finding out, you know, like, that goes beyond research, too. Like, look mm-hmm. at how kids learn. Like, I have a four-month-old niece, and she's just laying around looking at things, you know, or, like, figuring out how to roll over. What's that? You know, she's moving around and finding out, you know? So it's just, research can be, in academia, can be really scary and daunting, and I don't blame anyone that thinks that, because I'm also part of that group. But it's really not, like, at its core, it's just asking questions. And I think moving away from our topic, and also this could be a whole other podcast, I'm sure it already is, but I think that's more of a societal question of why don't we ask questions, or why isn't it easy to ask questions, you know? Like, you think of the little kids who always ask, well, why, you know, all the annoying why questions. Well, why do we think that's annoying? So, yeah, that brings up more issues in our society, but that's the whole point of this whole heckin' podcast, you know? Like, we're finding the why of where. There's more to our daily lives, you know? Things don't have to be the way they are, so let's ask questions. Let's think critically about our surroundings. And so I hope you've kind of gotten encouraged or inspired to do that after listening to us in our rambling today. I'd like to thank you all for listening, and my special co-guests or stars, the brains behind this project, you know, Tori and Christy, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us. Yeah. And thanks for listening. We put a lot of work into this, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah. Definitely make sure to check out Christy and Tori and Avery's podcast episodes. Like Tori said, we've put a lot of work into this, and there are a lot of people who helped us get here. So thank you to all of you. Shout out. You know who you are. Specifically, Joaquin. Thank you. And yeah. Okay, I think that's all we got. Mm-hmm. Have a good night, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.